I'm Rick Gamley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Almost 1,000 public radio stations across the country broadcast NPR programming, including, of course, New Hampshire Public Radio. And just as NPR has grown tremendously from its humble beginnings more than 40 years ago, so has NHPR. From one small transmitter in Concord, which went on the air in the early 1980s, to signals and transmitters all over the state, as well as a major presence online. NHPR has also continued to add to its local lineup, including just recently our new classical music service. And we've had to adjust our programming to national changes. This summer, for example, NPR announced the end of the road for Talk of the Nation, replaced by a new expanded Here and Now. Shepherding NHPR listeners and staff through these transitions is our guest today, NHPR President and CEO Betsy Gardella. This hour, we'll get her take on these shifts, as well as yet another change in top leadership at NPR. Recently, NPR CEO Gary Nell suddenly announced he was moving on to National Geographic, disappointing to a network that has now seen six leaders come and go in just the past 7 years. Let's get you into our conversation this hour. It's your chance to talk with the head of this news and information service that you rely on. Your questions and comments are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Betsy, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Laura. It is great to be here.
Well, lots to talk about this hour, as I said. But let's start off, Betsy, with your role as a member of NPR's board. And in that role, you'll be looking at yet another new leader for NPR. As I said, Gary Nell represents yet again more turnover at the top for the network. What do you make of these many changes in leadership at NPR, Betsy? It's hard.
It's really hard. It's really hard. But I'm glad that you started with that question, because it gives me a chance to say Gary has been great. He is really a professional. He has calmed the waters. He has built an extraordinary senior team. I have to say the board is in better shape than I think it's ever been. This is my fourth year on the board. The foundation board is strong. We've been through this before. We as a board had to navigate the transition from Vivian Schiller to an interim president CEO to the hiring of Gary. So for better or worse, we have a little experience doing this. And we have a board meeting in September 11th.
Oh, coming up soon.
Coming up soon. So this obviously is going to be at the top of our agenda. But, you know, what can you do? This did come up very unexpectedly for Gary. It was an extraordinary opportunity. He'd been a board member of the National Geographic Society. They were doing a search, and they just found, I know he's a dream candidate. They found a dream candidate in their own backyard. And that's not an organization that turns over leadership very often. So he just, it was an offer he couldn't refuse.
Well, and NPR has turned out to be an organization that has seen a lot of leadership turnover. David Folkenflik, the media reporter at NPR, said six CEOs, interim or permanent, in the last 7 years. Wow. I mean, that's can't be good for an organization.
It sounds like so much more turmoil than it actually felt on the inside, which is not to say that there aren't ups and downs. And, you know, there's always questions and morale issues when you have a change in leadership. You know, when people say that, they neglect to note that Kevin Close was the CEO for many years. So, yes, he moved on from NPR. Ken Stern took over. Ken left the organization. There was an interim, you know, so we have had this sort of ebb and flow. And what I hear from the senior team that I speak with is that the reaction was sort of, wow, and onward, you know, that there are such terrific people there leading the content division. You know, we know that Morning Edition is going to go on the air tomorrow and the day after tomorrow and the day after that. And I think what listeners need to feel confident in is that there will be no quality change to the content that they value and listen to every day from NPR.
Well, as I said, you're on the board of NPR. In addition to being president here at NHPR, what role are you going to play, Betsy, in selecting a new leader for NPR? And what are you going to be looking for?
Well, exactly how the search is going to unfold, I'll know more in a couple of weeks. Typically, what we would do is hire a search firm, an executive search firm, to do a national search. Pretty standard for this kind of position. I think we're looking for someone very much like Gary, somebody with the executive leadership in a large, high-impact, non-commercial media company. We are looking for someone with character and leadership and perspective and integrity, all of those things that we value in our programming, we value in our leadership. You need somebody with a sense of humor, somebody who loves to travel, because as you said, there are 1,000 stations and they all want time with the NPR president. So it's going to be tough. It's a big job with a tremendous amount of responsibility. NPR is a surprisingly complex organization. So, you know, I'm more than keeping my fingers crossed. I'll be involved in the search process in any way I can be. And, you know, I'm confident that we've got a great board chair, great vice chair. I think the leadership's in place.
All right. Well, speaking of changes, lots of changes here at NHPR as well that we'll talk about this hour. And you can join us as well. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. Again, today in the exchange, we're looking at the state of the station. We're sitting down with NHPR President and CEO Betsy Gardella, looking at some of the changes at the national level, as well as, of course, here at New Hampshire Public Radio. You can join us. Your comments, questions, kudos, criticisms are welcome. 1-800-892-6477. Speaking of change, Betsy, midday listeners here at NHPR have heard some major changes in the lineup with the departure of Talk of the Nation. Before we get into what replaced Talk of the Nation, I know there's some excitement around that. What was the thinking behind that? Talk of the Nation had a long, dignified run, tackled some great topics. People especially loved that Wednesday News Junkie segment with Ken Rudin. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, just as our board doesn't make programming decisions, the NPR board doesn't make programming decisions either. This was a staff recommendation and came out of a desire that's been expressed by the system over many years that they really hoped for a midday magazine format show. And by that, I mean a Morning Edition type, all things considered type show for the midday, something to sort of transition our listeners through the day by offering a number of features and news stories and an opportunity to cover breaking news midday. So that's sort of one strand of conversation. There was a lot made of Talk of the Nation coming to an end, and my take on it was very different. I thought, what television show has had a run of almost 30 years? You know, when you think of media and you think of how rapidly things change, I just sort of thought, good for them. For all of these years, they've offered this really high-quality call-in show, and you know, Neil has retired. I understand he's moving out west, and, you know, life goes on. So I thought, what a fantastic run for them. And it was something that, you know, we really celebrated here. In terms of Ken Rudin, I think Ken is still trying to figure out his role in the public radio ecosystem, but our listeners might be happy to know that we have talked to Ken about coming back and joining you, Laura, for primary night coverage and other election coverage, because he was so great for us last time around, was here in the studio with you. And so we're maintaining our relationship with Ken. We'll see what form that takes over time, but Here and Now was there. It's a terrific show. We carried that show. It was 1 hour long, produced by WBUR in Boston. And in this the collaboration with NPR, it's now 2 hours.
Yeah, and a lot of stations are replacing Talk of the Nation.
Talk of the Nation and switching up their schedules to do that.
You know, picking up, Betsy, on something that you've said already, you said a desire was expressed by the system, and you also talked about the public radio ecosystem. Give us a little bit more on that, because you have said the public radio ecosystem, as you describe it, isn't very well understood.
It's not understood, and it's really important. You know, we are this, as you said in your billboard, there are 1,000 stations. New Hampshire Public Radio represents, I think, 12 or 13 of those 1,000 stations, because we have a statewide network. And we are independent stations. And I think the shorthand in public radio is, I heard it on NPR. And I get that. But NPR is not a radio station. NPR is a program producer. We are the radio station that brings the content to our listeners. So I'll make a request of our listeners, just a little one, which is, when you're talking about something great that you've heard on the station, make sure that the H is not silent. Say, I heard on NHPR this morning this fantastic story.
Because that story might be from NPR, but it might be locally produced. It might be from the BBC. It might be from Public Radio International.
It could be from American Public Media. And really, especially in a day part like Morning Edition, you're hearing stories from NPR. You're hearing stories, something like, I don't know, 25 or 30% of the stories in Morning Edition come from member stations. So including our stories are often on the networks. You hear the Marketplace Morning Report. That comes from American Public Media. So it is this great collection of content from throughout the system.
And we will start taking your comments after a short break.
And this is The Exchange on NHPR. Good morning. I'm David Durman. It's 9:19. The NHPR member card opens doors, and this month it opens the doors to the Seacoast Science Center. September's benefit of the month is a 2-for-1 admission to the Interactive Science Center in Rye, New Hampshire. Visit nhpr.org for a look at the growing list of all member card benefits and to get your own card. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the University of New Hampshire, where education is more than a matter of degree. Now hosting campus tours in Durham and Manchester. Session info online at unh.edu. And Wentworth Douglas Hospital, supporting healthy communities in the seacoast of New Hampshire and southern Maine, wdhospital.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, an inside look at NHPR with our president and CEO, Betsy Gardella. We invite you to join us this hour, 1-800-892-6477. It's your chance to talk with the head of this news and information service that you rely on, that you listen to every day. We want your comments and questions at 1-800-892-6477, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. And Betsy, before we go to our listeners, just before the break, we talked about all the changes at NPR and how some of those changes have resulted in changes here in our own programming lineup, mentioning the two-hour edition of Here and Now. Two other changes that I want to ask you about, and then I do want to go to our listeners. That change of Here and Now, going 2 hours, has meant that our own other locally produced program, Word of Mouth, is now at 2 o'clock. So That's been another big difference for our audience.
It has. It has. You know, Here and Now has always broadcasted live at noon, and we put it at 1 o'clock. The first hour of a 2-hour show is typically the stronger hour. we didn't want to lose the opportunity to broadcast that.
And that's where the breaking news often happens,
yes,
too.
Yes, and so it seemed like a nice transition out of Diane Rehm to go into another news-focused show. A lot of the second hour of Here and Now is more feature-like, which made for, we thought, a very nice transition to our show, Word of Mouth. The other thing that just is coincidentally great about it is that Here and Now, Word of Mouth is a four-day-a-week show. And even though Talk of the Nation went away, Science Friday did not go away. So by moving our show, Word of Mouth, into that 2 o'clock slot, we could hold on to Science Friday. Ira Flatow is a big favorite. We hear that over and over again from our listeners. So we think it worked out really well. And the flow, again, you know, something we think about. Virginia's show, I think, is a really great transition into Terry Gross. So we'll see how, you know, our listeners, once they get, whenever you change the schedule, it's disruptive. And it takes a while for folks to get into the new rhythm, but we're looking for feedback. We're hoping that people like it. I think it sounds great. I have to say it's a change I'm really pleased with, so I hope others are pleased as well.
Well, and one more change that has not been disruptive, that represents a long-held dream for New Hampshire Public Radio, is the return of classical music, Betsy. Now,
yeah.
Some people know about this, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah, it's interesting. We teamed up a couple of years ago with Highland Community Broadcasting, and they have upgraded their signal. They're at 91.5 in the Capital Region and on our HD2 channel. For all of our listeners with HD radios, I'm sure there are thousands of them. That's at 89.1 HD2. But we found that a lot of folks around the state are either listening online or they've downloaded our app. If you download the nhpr.org app, you can listen to news or classical music, or you can just go for the Classical New Hampshire app, and that offers the classical music. There's a website, too, for Classical New Hampshire, so you can see what the music playlist is going to be. And we're trying to make a go of it. You know, there were a lot of listeners who were disappointed when we let go of the classical service back in 2001. And when we had this opportunity, we thought, let's see if we can support it. Get it on the air, see if listeners will tune in and take advantage and contribute. You know, like NHPR, it's a service that relies on a combination of listener donations and corporate underwriting. So,
and it's not just a national, kind of like us, they have locally produced segments and national segments.
Yes, it's a little, it's very heavy on the nationally produced, because the local production is something we've got to gear up for. So if we really understand that there is support in the community for classical music, we would love to be able to take advantage of the fantastic offerings throughout New Hampshire. I mean, there's a lot of great live classical music, especially in the summers. We'd love to be able to record and broadcast that for a bigger audience.
Let's get some feedback from our audience right now, Betsy, and then we'll talk some more. Our number again here on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us an email if you'd like as well, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. Here's an email that came in before the show, Betsy, from Manny, who says, I'm disappointed to see Living on Earth move to an obscure spot, along with our own show, Something Wild, both excellent and informative. Manny also says, too much BBC, it's a great service and perspective, but I'd rather hear less of it replaced with other show repeats. This, again, is a programming question. Now, you're our president and CEO, so you're not dealing with day-to-day programming decisions, but maybe you can address who would deal with Manny's concerns in terms of, you know, being disappointed in the way that we've shuffled some programs.
Yeah, you know, it's though we try, we can't be all things to all people. And we do make some programming decisions that I know listeners are disappointed by. Michael Rathke is our program director, and I really encourage people to send Michael an email He's M. Rathke at nhpr.org, and he will respond to every listener comment that he receives. For Manny, I want to make sure that he knows that Something Wild is played in prime time. It is played every Friday morning during Morning Edition, and we insert it in Living on Earth, because that's one of our short-form programs that we're very proud of.
Yeah, that plays on Fridays. It's a great feature to the Friday. Kind of eases you into the weekend,
yes,
too.
Yes, it does. Yeah. You know, one of the things, though, that I like about that programming comment is that I think it reflects the appetite on the part of our listeners for environmental coverage. And that's something that we are thinking about a lot. How can we beef that up locally? There are so many great stories from New Hampshire, from New England. We're talking to our fellow stations throughout New England. And we have an extraordinary environment reporter on our staff, Sam Evans Brown, who just does tremendous, tremendous work. So we hear you in terms of that. If I'm reading your email right, that you want Manny is expressing that desire for a little bit more environmental coverage. So that is something that we are talking about.
Manny, thanks for the email. And again, you can email us at exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Betsy, let's go to our listeners on the phone now. Ellen's joining us from Concord. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having this show. I adore your show, Laura, and I adore NHPR. And my comment today is mainly that I recently became a Leadership Circle member, and the reason I did so was because NHPR has been my family through the 750 miles a week that I used to drive from Vermont to New Hampshire. And I'd love to encourage the station that during the fun drive, because I didn't always contribute. I was in the car, and in the days 30 years ago before I used a cell phone, I just wanted to make a point that I really hope you congratulate the people who do bother, who actually do call in and either mention them by name or take their story and keep on putting those out, because I've noticed in recent fun drives that I've heard more about what you were going to win instead of what we win by staying on NHPR and patting the people on the back that, gosh, pull over and do contribute to your wonderful station.
Thank you, Ellen, very much for the comments. Go ahead, Betsy.
Yeah, Ellen, thank you. And those Leadership Circle gifts are really, really meaningful to us. So thank you so much for giving it that level. And maybe you'd like to come in and record a testimonial and tell your story. We do try to get those listener stories to set the example, to inspire others who are listening to give, if not at the Leadership Circle level, at whatever level is right for them. So I hear what you're saying. You know, we try to communicate the benefits of participating in the life of the station in as many ways as possible, because different things, different messages appeal to different listeners. But it sounds like your heart is in the place where ours is, where we just so value the content. We wish we could simply just ask and set the example and raise the money that we need. But really, I'm serious. If you want to send me an email and would like to come in and record a testimonial, our trustee Andrew Perella will make you sound wonderful on the air. So thank you.
Well, in terms of, you know, focusing on what people get, she may be referring to the recently completed car raffle, which, you're right, Ellen, is all about what you get. It's a raffle. It's
right.
Less of a, it's a fundraiser, but it's a different kind of fundraiser. So she may be responding to that. But I'm glad you called, Ellen, because it does raise a comment that I get a lot, Betsy, when I'm out in the community and I'm talking, you know, grocery shopping, YMCA, wherever I may be. And that's, Laura, why do you guys do so much fundraising? Has the amount we do gone up over the years, Betsy?
It has not gone up. I think it just feels that way.
And why does it feel that way?
Because we've been at it for over 30 years. And a lot of our listeners have been listening to a lot of these fund drives over the years. So really the best news that I can share around on-air fundraising has to do with the sustainer program. You know, half of the money that we raise from individuals, we raise during those on-air fund drives. If listeners become sustaining members and we're not renewing people during the fund drives, we
time
can
and time
shorten
again.
Those drives. And that is, there are two big wins for the sustainer program. One is it evens out our cash flow. And that's very much an inside the you know, beltway kind of, you know, it's nice to know that we have that reliable income. It helps us with our planning. It helps us, just as any business would, understand what we can and can't do and how things are going. But it's a listener-focused revenue strategy, because ultimately, if enough of our listeners become sustainers, those on-air fund drives will be much, much shorter. We'll be looking for new members, always looking for new contributors. But right now, we're at a little over 30% of our contributors are sustainers.
That's a lot, given how new this is.
We just began it last year. We thought maybe we'd get to 12%. We got to 30%. I think listeners appreciate this as much as we do. Stations that are doing really well are at 70 and 80% sustainers.
Wow.
So we're hoping this year to get to 50. That's an ambitious goal, but we'll see how that goes. But it really is a win.
Are there other models that you're seeing at other stations around the country? Again, I'm sure you're talking with other presidents at other stations, especially since you're on the NPR board. Are there other models that other stations are looking at to deal with this issue of, you know, fundraiser fatigue?
Well, I think the sustainer is it at the moment. This is sort of the big idea. I was out in Los Angeles for a meeting this summer, and I was very struck by the fact that KPCC was doing a lot of text-to-give messaging. They were not in a fund drive, but they were saying, if you like this story, text your gift of $10 right now. And I asked the president and CEO of the station if that was effective. And he said, well, it's just something we've started that we're trying because,
why
you
not?
Know, it's a new tool and maybe it will be effective. Raising money $10 at a time is a sort of slow way to go. But, you know, maybe that's, again, going to appeal to a segment of the audience that might not otherwise give. And so it will engage them a little bit more, invest them in the programming. There's a sort of underlying psychology, too, I think, to membership donations to public radio. And it connects you to a community that you feel in a very deep way that you're already a part of. It sort of makes that connection explicit. And so whether it's through text to give or a sustainer gift, a leadership circle gift, a one-time membership contribution, or even a raffle ticket purchase.
Well, the text to give is interesting. And I do remember a couple years back, other charities were not really a charity, but other nonprofits using that model.
Absolutely.
So interesting to see what will happen.
It's very popular when you're looking at a national disaster.
Right. I remember after the Haiti earthquake,
exactly,
for example.
Exactly.
Let's take some more questions from our listeners, Betsy. Again, the number for you to join us to talk with Betsy Gardella, President and CEO of New Hampshire Public Radio, is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Celeste is waiting in Hopkinton. Hey, Celeste, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm very supportive of the classical music station and have been ever since they started. And I'd like to know what, how NHPR contributes to the success of that station. Is there financial support, technological support? In what ways are you supporting through the merger the classical music station?
Yeah, Celeste, thanks a lot for calling in.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I live in Hopkinton too, Celeste, and I get the signal very well. I hope you do too. It's not been a merger. Really, we've teamed up to do this together, and we are invested in all aspects of the production of the station. We are involved with technical support. We have taken over the membership program and the corporate underwriting program. All of the breaks that you hear are recorded here at our studio. We're working with the Highland Community Broadcast folks to craft those interstitial pieces that localize the station. So it's a pretty comprehensive effort. We don't have a lot of listeners. The number of listeners is increasing, but it's still small. We've gone up to about 2,500 weekly listeners. And I think I was looking at something that showed that we have about 800 people who are listening online. I didn't check out how many people are listening via the app, but we're starting to grow the audience. And of course, we're hoping that that will bring in some more membership contributions and that will allow us to do more. We'd love to be able to do more local programming, as I said before.
Yeah, and it's still new, Celeste, so I really appreciate the question. It's one that I had as well, so thanks for calling in. Here's a comment from our Facebook page. Person didn't give a leave a name, but he or she says, is there any chance that someone conservative need apply to the position as president? Are there any executives who are known members of the GOP, for example? I'm assuming this person means the new president of NPR. That's what we were talking about before. Yeah, thanks for the comment.
Oh, well, I mean, somebody's political affiliation is not something that we would consider in the search process. It's a kind of interesting question. Would it be helpful? Would it be helpful given that some think that NPR is left-leaning? I mean, there are others who think it's right-leaning. There are others who think we get it just right. But I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Given that Gary Nell came in at a time of critique of NPR and all that, I think maybe that's what this person is getting at.
I mean, Gary, I have no idea what Gary's politics are. He's somebody who's deeply committed to education, deeply committed to veterans issues, and came in very deeply involved in using the Sesame Street brand and values to cross cultural divisions.
That's where
so
he
the
had
work
come
in
from.
Israel and Palestine. So he came in very much as a a non-denominational CEO.
Thanks for that Facebook comment. You can post your comments on our Facebook page as well. We'll be right back.
And this is The Exchange on NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning. I'm David Darman.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, battling wildfires in the West. Then, a new novel set in Norway about family secrets. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning after The Exchange from 10 until noon on NHPR. And support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from People's United Bank, providing individual mortgage solutions for new and existing mortgages. People's United Bank, what know-how can do. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And Dos Amigos Burritos, fresh Mexican eat-in or take-out, hearty, healthy, happy in downtown Portsmouth, Dover, Concord, and Manchester. Online menu at dosamigos.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we take another look at end-of-life planning, the legal and emotional side of this very difficult issue. Email us your questions and stories before the program if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, NHPR's president, Betsy Gardella, is here talking about the changes and challenges at NHPR. You can join our conversation. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. It's your opportunity to talk with the head of this news and information service that you rely on. We want your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. And Betsy, before we go back to our listeners, I did want to ask you about a huge challenge and opportunity facing all media, not just public media. And that's that we all have been expanding into the digital world, a world that doesn't just mean, having a nice website, but having a presence everywhere our audience is, on Facebook, on Twitter, on blogs, on Instagram, on other platforms that are emerging every day. Couple questions. First of all, how do you keep up? It seems like every, 4 months, there's some new place where you have to be.
Yeah, I don't know how you keep up. I can't keep up. Things are changing just so very, very quickly. One of the things that we're doing in an effort to kind of keep our thinking current is we have just created our first fellowship, as you know, because our first fellow is going to be working with the exchange team. And at the core of her responsibilities is social media and digital media and figuring out how does the exchange expand on these opportunities to really engage with listeners in a different way.
And it is an opportunity.
It's a great opportunity. Well, for the show, it's a fantastic opportunity. For the station in general, having these fellows, this is our first, it's the Dick and Barbara Couch Fellowship. We're hoping to be able to fund two other fellowships. But things are changing so fast that a way to kind of gain that insight that we need to make sure that our thinking is always fresh and sharp is to bring younger people into the station on a rotating basis so that we can get a sense of what they know and learn from them. It's, we might be old dogs, but we need to learn new tricks. And for this generation that's just getting out of college, it is in their DNA. They pick up this stuff like it's nobody's business. It's just theirs. It's part of what they do. It's who they are. It's how they learn. It's how they communicate. And so we want to be able to take advantage of that, sort of put that that millennial sensibility when it comes to digital opportunities together with the wisdom and experience of our seasoned news and programming staff. So that's something that we're doing here.
And we're thrilled to announce that today, actually, because the Exchange, of course, has wanted to expand its digital presence, its social media presence. But given the challenges of just producing the daily radio show, we haven't been able to do as much as we wanted. So we've hired Faith Meixel.
Yay!
And we've been joking about whether she's our fellow or our fellowette. I'm not really sure about that.
But I think of her as our fella.
Fella. There you go. But that is representative of the challenge, I think, that all media faces. And you know this better than me, Betsy, that, it's there and we want to be there too. But you have to think outside the box. Expand yourself, think in new ways. Talk about some of the other, again, challenges and opportunities that all the new digital platforms and social media platforms present for this station, this service.
Yeah, we're doing a retreat in September, a content retreat, and we're going to be looking at different things that we might be able to do over time to improve our relationship with our audience, our service for our audience. And in preparing for that, I've been looking at just some of the data, and we know that we've got about 175,000 weekly listeners. We have about 150,000 monthly visitors to our website. And what's interesting is back in the old days, sort of the late 90s, everyone who came to our website would come direct. They would type in nhpr.org and come to the website. Now, as many people are coming to us from Facebook and from Twitter as coming to us directly.
Wow.
Which is sort of interesting. And
so they may not be seeking us, but they find us.
They find us through our own Facebook page. Mm-hmm. They see a posting on the NHPR Facebook page about an exchange program, and they click through to the website to hear the show, but they're coming from Facebook. So, and the other thing that I thought was interesting is that while still the vast majority of those who come to our digital platforms are coming through their PCs, we have over 300,000 monthly visitors who are coming through tablets and smartphones. So what does that tell us? That tells us that we need a good mobile site. We need a site that's going to be easy for people to read on their phones. If we're providing service, we have to understand what kind of experience is going to make our content really accessible for them. So by tracking the data, we can really learn a lot about how our current audience is using us. And when I talk about who's using iPads, who's using smartphones, who's on Twitter, who's coming on Facebook, the demographic is a broad one. You know, it's we have many, many, many listeners who are in their 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s who are using these new tools. They are so intuitive. The age barriers that may have been there before are really not there.
Oh, you mentioned data, and I want to ask you about that, too. But I also want to invite our listeners again. You can join us on Facebook or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us an old-fashioned phone call. We love those, too. 1-800-892-6477. Your chance to talk with Betsy Gardella, President and CEO here at New Hampshire Public Radio, about some of the issues facing this public media service that you rely on. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, too, if you'd like. And here's an email that came in a little bit ago. This is from Jack. He says, Josh Rogers used to be on Monday mornings with updates of what's going on in New Hampshire politics. Did that segment go away, or have I just been missing it? Jack, thanks for the question.
You have been missing it, and I have been missing it, too, but it's coming back this fall. Josh took the summer off when things wrapped up at the State House, and he will be back. I'm not sure if it's next week or mid-September, but very shortly that segment, which is called On the Political Front, will return. You might also, if you're not aware of it, Laura's show is every Friday doing a news roundup. And very often Josh is a guest on that show because he is really keeping his fingers on the pulse of what's going on in New Hampshire politics. So even in the summertime, as things slow down a little bit, there's really not enough for Josh to fill that morning segment, but there's always reflecting on the full week, plenty to talk about. So that's another place to catch him in a conversation with Laura about
right.
what's going on.
Well, and Jack, thanks for the email. And Josh was with us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup just last week.
Yes.
And that is another change that's new, the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, kind of dovetailing very nicely, if I could say so, into the Diane Rehm Friday News Roundup. Other new programs coming up on the fall calendar, Betsy. I know fall isn't officially here yet, but...
Well, new programs or
just
new...
changes, things afoot that listeners
well,
can look forward to in the fall.
There are some very exciting series that are being planned by the newsroom. Amanda Loader, who's become our weekend host, is still business and economy reporter for us, and she's doing a 5-part series on app development.
Oh, wow.
She's going to look at it from the college training level, who's interested in learning about, to who are the businesses in New Hampshire building apps. It's such a huge activity right now in the digital space. And also looking at the potential economic impact if New Hampshire could become a kind of mecca for that kind of work.
The executive producer of The Exchange, Keith Shields, has a series that's going to be wrapping up later this year.
Yeah, Keith is doing a series on the towns in New Hampshire turning 250. And Michael Brindley, who's our newscast producer, is doing a series on those historical markers that you see around the state, sort of what's the story really behind some of those markers. I think there's some pretty interesting ones. Sean Hurley is going to be looking at poets in the state, starting out with North Country poets. Todd Bookman is looking at Affordable Care Act issues, especially as we're coming up to that October 1st open enrollment date. And he'll be following that through the issues with Medicaid
expansion,
so,
the debate
yes.
in New Hampshire.
And Writers on a New England Stage is going to be fantastic this year. We've got the series starting with Margaret Atwood, and Bill Bryson is coming in. And
wow, big names coming.
Scott Berg, who's maybe not a household name, he's done a biography on Wilson, did one of my very favorite biographies on Max Perkins. And then we have Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor coming in right at the beginning of the new year. So they're looking toward a very fantastic season.
Wow, so a lot going on.
A busy fall.
A very busy fall. And appropriate for us to be talking about now. At the end of the Labor Day weekend, we all kind of take a deep breath and go,
I know, we're back to school.
Okay, exactly. Well, I did want to ask you also, Betsy, about something you mentioned earlier. And this is all the data that is coming in now about our audience, you know, how people are accessing our news and information, for example. This gets into something that I know you've been looking at called data journalism. Now, journalists have always used data, and good journalists have always crunched their numbers very carefully when it comes to presenting information to their audience. So what's different?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. One is we've got a lot more data than we ever did because, as we all know, every cell phone call we make, every email we send, every search we do on a website is tracked and recorded and stored and primarily used to market to us as consumers. We are, of course, thinking about how can we use the data that's available, especially the data that's made public, to enrich the journalism that we produce. We've been and also create more transparency with our listeners. So we've been doing that piece by doing a lot of what we call infographics. So, for example, when we did our gun series this last spring, there was a wonderful infographic on the website. Todd Bookman is doing this at sort of end of life, just last week did a 3-part medical directives end of life series.
And we're following up on that tomorrow, by the way.
And there's a great glossary on our website so that, you know, providing more information and more visuals to for all those visual learners who like to kind of get into the nuts and bolts. But data journalism offers tremendous possibilities. And I'll give you one quick example, and it's not one of ours. It is a project that I really admired that was done by our colleagues at New York Public Radio. And what they did was they plotted out the location of every stop and frisk incident throughout the city, so that you could see on a map of the five boroughs where those stops had been made.
That's a lot of data.
It's
New York
a lot of
a
data.
Very big
there were
place.
A lot of, and they've actually done this year for year. So they've actually seen the number of stop and frisks decline. But by plotting this out, it seeded stories on the part of the newsroom. So what they found in going to those locations is that maybe there was some racial profiling going on. So they did some stories around that. Maybe there was some unnecessary force used in stop and frisk. They reported on that. They also found out, which I thought was really interesting, is that most of the guns that they found were found outside of stop and frisk hot zones. So people who had guns were not keeping them where the authorities thought they were keeping them. They were hiding them elsewhere.
So was it clear that they did have guns? It's
well,
just they
I don't
weren't on them.
Well, they were not on them. They were found elsewhere.
Got it.
Anyway, I don't know if this influenced the recent U.S. Circuit Court decision, but this court found on August 12th, this is something that WNYC listeners were very well versed in, and there were lawsuits filed, and the judge ruled that the New York City Police Department had violated the 4th and 14th Amendments in the way that the stop and frisks were conducted. And so did the reporting raise up the issues to that level? I don't know. I can't say that. If so, it was a correlation, not a cause. But I think it's very interesting because you have this data, very deep, specific data, that you can do a different kind of reporting that I think really serves the public radio audience. And that's what we'll be looking to do here.
You can slice and dice it in ways you couldn't before.
You couldn't before. And you know, so much of the data is available. So we need to—now, WNYC has a whole data team. They have a staff of data analysts, and we're not there yet, but we are right now in the midst of a search for our first digital journalist. And so this is the kind of capacity that we're looking to build.
Wow. Well, Betsy, hard to believe we have just less than a minute left. And I just wonder if you have any sort of, you know, I hate to say it, but 2014 is approaching. We've got a couple more months before this year is out. What are your sort of big hopes for the wrap-up of this year?
Oh, my gosh. Well,
there's so much. We've talked about so much.
There is so much. And I guess what I'm feeling right now in terms of 2014 is I think we have the strongest staff that we've ever had. We've been able to add to the staff. We've gotten two North Country reporters. We have a reporter out on the seacoast now. We have a fantastic group of reporters here. The Exchange has never done better work. Word of mouth is soaring. We're able to invest in this fellowship program in digital journalism. Our listeners are coming through for us. So long as our fundraising goes well, we will provide the great, great work that I think our listeners value.
Okay. Well, it's good to check in with you, Betsy.
Thank you very much, Laura. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Betsy Gardella, president and CEO of NHPR since 2005. Since we mentioned social media today, I encourage you to like us on Facebook. We're going to be expanding our presence there, posting articles and reports during future shows relevant to those topics. You can also follow us on Twitter if you'd like. And thanks for listening today. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, tackling the taboo on discussing death. In a series last week, NHPR health reporter Todd Bookman examined this movement to encourage end-of-life planning, from the legal concerns of living wills and healthcare proxies to the emotional side of managing family dynamics around this most difficult issue. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
This is NHPR. It's 9:58. The Diane Rehm Show is coming up next at 10 o'clock. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from North Branch Construction, celebrating 55 years in business. From custom-built homes to eco-friendly commercial buildings, on time, on budget. Find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and northbranch.net.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. President Obama stunned nearly everyone when he announced he would seek congressional authorization before ordering military strikes on Syria. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee opens hearings this afternoon, and the House and Senate promise up or down votes by next week. Obama's decision.